so Google has their Google I/O event, and they're probably going to be talking about Google Glass like they did last year. What do you think of that?
Of Google Glass?
Yeah, what's your impression so far? I know you haven't tried it personally.
I haven't tried it, and I just watched the video with the guy from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah, Fred Armisen, the Engadget video.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has a ways to go. I'm curious behind the reason why they wanted to do it in a glass form. You know, I don't know what the benefit of that is.
You mean like the idea of it being what they call a heads-up display?
Yeah.
Well, that's the category product they think is going to advance.
Ah, okay. I'm not a big fan of it.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm that interested in it after I heard how limited the functionality is. I guess if it had the power of, like, a current Android phone, then it might be interesting. But it sounds like it has very basic kind of tethered capabilities. And I don't know, you know. Yeah, I'm not that excited about it either. But Google, it's not clear whether this is, like, more of a publicity thing or they think it's going to be a core product line for them in the future. But we got some stuff here. We got a clip coming up. Little bit of a wrong-headed history lesson.
People could say, well, the founders, they still had slaves. But the Constitution's interpretation expanded to where then it got banned. They tried to ban it when they first created the Constitution in 1798, but it took 60-something years to do it. The point is, it's the idea of liberty. Why are they demonizing it? Because it creates checks and balances on government. By the way, Richard Belzer's book.
Well, you know, there's some other stuff going on. Did you hear about the IRS story?
How they are targeting right-wing groups?
They were, I guess.
For 2 years, it looks like they were looking into them.
Well, yeah, so right-wing groups, like, they anything with the word Tea Party in it. And I heard also groups that, well, and that's the kind of thing that, yeah, a lot of people will laugh at. Because, well, I think a lot of those people involved in the Tea Party movement were, like, racists and dupes and idiots and far-right nutcases and you know, that I wonder how much scrutiny that movement really deserved. But then also, they didn't leave themselves, the IRS just didn't leave themselves a lot of leeway. Instead of looking at it like, be just that, like, they also apparently were targeting groups that dedicated to teaching the Constitution. There was some wording like that.
Oh. And what was the IRS actually looking into for these groups?
Well, I think it's, I think what happened was they gave what they're admitting was an excessive level of scrutiny to certain groups. There's a lot of barriers that they can put up from groups not being given the tax exempt status that they want, tax deductible status, whatever, you know, or some other stuff. It's all that regulatory nonprofit stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess it's about 501c4s. You know, you hear about 501c3s. Yeah. I don't know. It was like this big you know, I guess, you know, overreach by the IRS.
And now the Republicans are getting all excited about it and getting upset about it?
Yeah, I don't I guess, like, you know, there is a lot of excitement in the Republican world right now over these supposed scandals. But so far, you know, the people that are being blamed, and let's not, you know, let's not be disingenuous. It could be broader and it could go higher. But so far, the people that have been connected with the IRS issue are the career bureaucrats that were investigating looking into the status of those groups or looking into whether approve those groups or whatever. And it isn't so far connected to the political level above them that would involve the actual Obama administration, where he actually appoints people and stuff like that.
Okay.
Like you said, Snapchat is that pop trendy with like kids?
Yeah, and it's that teen, I guess, age group that it's really popular with.
Well, that's the wave of the future, I guess.
Yeah.
So what I heard was that Snapchat on Android you can find where the photos are stored and they're not actually erased. What they are is they're renamed, so it isn't they're not seen as a JPEG, they just changed the ending on the file. I read that. I think they looked at the Android version, and they haven't found that on the iOS, but they're assuming it's there too. Because the whole idea is that the photo just shows up and then disappears, right? But then when the photo disappears, you think it's being erased, but it's not actually being erased. It's just having its file name changed. So that it doesn't show up as a .jpg file. But that's it. And furthermore, people can screenshot, can't they? I mean, I haven't tried, but I assume that once it's on the screen briefly, you can just hit both buttons on the iPhone or do whatever you have to do for screenshot and Android, and you have a copy of it in your photo roll, right?
Yeah. And then you can just post that anywhere. So again, you're being watched everywhere and anywhere.
Well, but people are very sharing of their images of themselves on the younger
the age selfies. Groups.
Yeah, that's actually now is that actually slowly becoming a legitimate art form, dare I say? You know what I mean? Because that used to be something like, I think people that aren't I don't know where the dividing line is, but there's a lot of people look askance at those, don't they? Like, I thought that was just a teenager thing until about 5 years ago. It's like teenagers up to, like, maybe they're up to, like, 25 now or so. But it's like, you don't want to post one of those, like, of yourself, even, like...
I think I see people do them of all ages.
It's out there now, really? Okay. Yeah. Because do they do them in bathroom mirrors? Those awful, you know what I mean? It's like an awful cliche, do you know what I mean? Like, it's become an archetype, that image. The image of, like, that, you know, I mean, people, even those zeros mouth looks that people were using, like the pursed lips or the you know what I'm talking about, the duck lips, you know what I mean? Like, that's what you expect is some stupid, you know what I mean? Like, look on the face, and there's a whole way that those are supposed to look, like, you know, and the preferably writing on clothes and hats that's backwards because of the exposure of the mirror.
Yes, especially that. And if you're in your bikini, even better. And please show us your abs.
So, there's this book that I finished reading. Do you want to hear about it?
Sure.
So it's this book called Paintwork by Tim Maughan. And it's about, augmented reality. Now, it's interesting, there's a term they keep using, specs, I think, like, spectacles, glasses, mm-hmm. And there's different brands, like the tech brands, I think, that are around now, basically, will make different ones, so people will have, like, Apple or Sony specs or whatever, so the heads-up display, the Google Glass type thing, I guess, has become commonplace for a certain group of society. So this guy's like a gamer. It's like set, I don't know, 30 years in the future or something like that. And so the first part is set in some British city, Bristol or Birmingham. Anyway, so It's like this person does these kind of art displays where people that are wearing a certain glass will see what he did to a billboard or a sign or somewhere, some landmark. So he changes stuff to match his artistic vision if people are looking through the glasses that can see it.
Oh, interesting.
And then he gets involved in some gaming racket and goes and plays this virtual game. So they describe a game that he's playing with like rice patties and stuff, and then he's fighting a battle. He's going on a quest or something like that. And then so I guess it's like a virtual reality World of Warcraft successor or something like that. Okay. And then I think he gets in trouble for videotaping it, and then he gets sent to a Chinese re-education center. I'm not sure, but like it's like this vision of the future where they already have people like in China that work in sweatshop conditions that do World of Warcraft works, that they can sell the characters to people.
Right.
Like, I think he becomes one of those people because of his debts to the gaming underworld or something like that. Maybe by force, so halfway through, this guy kind of drops out. But I think you've kind of heard about some of these big-time gamers that then get involved in the second half of the story.
Okay.
Which is set in Cuba. And so the second part is about this big augmented reality battle that this guy, from Korea, Leo Kim or whatever, and then this guy, Paul and Marcus, or these two guys from Cuba, they have a battle, and it's this augmented reality game that has made its way around the world, and there's different versions of the software, and so they have these big battle robots that are virtual that they play in the game, but then the place Havana before the game gets flooded with cheap Chinese specs, so all the kids are watching the battle, and then they have another battle, and then that's pretty much it in the game. But for some reason, those Cuban guys end up in a Cuban re-education center.
Sounds like re-education centers are not in really fun places.
Well, I mean, it's like a vision of the future 30 years away where Cuba is still closed off to the U.S. and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if the writer was English or what, but it's just like vision of the future where there's these augmented reality games where people are driving on motorcycles and cars through like cities in controlling their thing. So they're actually going around the city doing that and people are watching, but the actual things fighting are all virtual.
Sounds like a good book.
All right, well, I'll try to come up with one that sounds more interesting for the next book segment. you did pretty well, just sitting through that. I appreciate your tolerance. You didn't stop me in the middle and say,
"You're gonna lose a tooth. You'll lose a fucking tooth."
Or anything like that. So
no, you got all your teeth.
So what is going on in Cleveland? In the last week, there's been a crush of national media attention because of the three young women found and apparently liberated in part by Charles Ramsey.
I hear her screaming. I meet my McDonald's. I come outside. I see this girl going nuts trying to get out of a house.
First, called him a hero. Then there was a song course with the auto tune with what he said.
And she says, "Call 911. My name is Amanda Berry."
This is a small city. Well, I'm here in Lakewood, in my backyard, but Lakewood is just a few blocks from Cleveland in terms of where I am. And
this city, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of people asking questions. They're saying, what kind of thing goes on here, where they want to know how many times the police visited the house, what kind of investigation happened, whether they were really looking for one or more of the women. But what you see is you see this small city getting overwhelmed with attention and with inquiries. And so you see the Cleveland detective talking on Rachel Maddow, basically just sticking to the talking points. But then you see all this national and I guess even in some cases worldwide media, but along with locals, and the families are asking for privacy. The families of the three women, their victims, are asking for privacy. The perpetrator has been charged, but anyway, that's just the news stories, basically. But what people are kind of wondering is, what do people know about their neighbors? What kind of neighbors do people have in Cleveland? Let me tell you, I mean, here I am in Lakewood, not far from Cleveland, and I'll tell you, there are some pretty fucked up people around here. I mean, I don't know what is going on half the time with my neighbors. I have this, actually couple of vines that I've posted. They have different sides of my house, neighbors, just being like really annoying and menacing. And it is a crazy vibe here in East Lakewood. Cleveland, people, this city has a crazy gun culture. And I'm telling you, there are people out in the country in a lot of places that are stockpiling weapons. There's plenty of people in the city here. This place is crazy. I mean, you see the economic despair. That's what's really driving a lot of the problems.
See, up until yesterday, the only thing that kept me from losing sleep was the lack of money. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this specific one, where the suspect has been charged with a range of offenses, that story though is bringing the most attention that's come here since probably LeBron James leaving, and probably more than that serial killer who was just on the Near East Side. Now, this happened on the Near West Side, and this is a neighborhood in this pocket, this corner of Cleveland. It's an area with a lot of problems, for sure, and I think people tend to ignore their neighbors. There's so much foreclosure, there's so many problems. People are more scared of their neighbors around here than anything. So, you hear about stuff going on, but this place, like, you know, since these women have been freed, there's been at least one murder out on the east side, which seems extremely routine. And, you know, we have really over-aggressive policing in a lot of parts of the city here, and I don't know what this place is going to look like in another decade or two. I think there's a lot of denial. I think that you see people that are very optimistic about the city. You hear like Chef Michael Simon talking up the city, but even then, you know, you hear him talk it up in a disingenuous way sometimes. Like, he talks about how it's great that, in his opinion, that most of the people in Cleveland are from Cleveland. Now, actually, I'm not from Cleveland. I'm not from around here originally. I grew up in the Chicago area, and my wife grew up in California. And we moved out here about 5 years ago. And I have to say, there's a great insularity here. There's a great deal of closed-minded people. Now, look at what they do. They elect idiots like John Kasich. He's the governor. They have, you know, very, very stupid laws about a lot of stuff. And what do you see people do? There's these boosters. They go on Twitter and they use the hashtag happy in Clee. And I'm not saying you can't be happy here. I'm happily married and I have actually, you know, I have a good time. I think I do all right, but look at all the people all around the city and the actual rate of joblessness, the rate of foreclosures, and there's this boosterism. I think people are in denial that if this city doesn't get some serious economic boost, and something other than a stupid sports franchise, it is very possibly going to go in the direction of Detroit to total economic ruin, absolute collapse, and I don't want that to happen. I may not be living here in a decade, but I don't want to see this city collapsing in a decade. And, you know, I don't know, right now, this city has to find a lot of resources to help it, and it has to dig deep. But I think that the country has to help some of these Midwestern Rust Belt cities, and I think that the best, you know, the best way to get things improving here is to stimulate the economy with fiscal stimulus. You can read Paul Krugman if you want to learn about that, but we need something here in Cleveland and the area, because right now I think people are just more or less going to ignore their neighbors as much as possible, so I understand why people didn't know. I mean, there's so many abandoned houses. There's a lot of bad things when communities get abandoned like that. And we need to help out homeowners. We don't need to help out the banks. And that's not how the economic policy has been under Barack Obama. And it's not like it was any better. It was worse under George W. Bush. But Obama hasn't helped the homeowners. He hasn't helped people in the Midwest. This is a Midwestern president, supposedly. And what is he doing for, you know, these cities? And, you know, Chicago actually has its issues, but the other cities in the Midwest, a lot of them need some help.
That segment was taken from my YouTube video about what's going on in Cleveland, as I said. So that's a
yeah. I mean, everything you said is really, you know, true from our perspective here. You know, as we can see our neighbors and the economy and, you know, the government here and the people in general. I mean, there is this false sense that everything is better. And I would say there's probably a big racial divide as well.
Yes.
You know, in terms of who thinks they're happy in Clee and who's not so happy in Clee.
There's a way to get an RSS reader for the Mac. It's called Vienna RSS, and it's an RSS reader that actually is really good. I like it. I think I would recommend this as your desktop Mac RSS reader. It's free and open source. You can look at the code on GitHub. You can also go to their site and download it and install it.
Awesome. Yeah, I know with Google Reader being gone, there's been a big search for a replacement.
Yeah, Vienna is a nice idea if you like the desktop Mac experience. Like, you could take your OPML file from Google Reader or wherever and export it, and then, you know, take a, you know, you can just kind of look at your feeds in the kind of traditional email reader kind of style. You know, it's good. And the other thing about it is, you know, you click on the story, it'll open it up in a browser. And I was able to add my details of my Pocket account. So I have a button right there. Very nice. Just hit that button. And then with one more click, because all it is really the launching the bookmarklet to the save screen. But then I can add it to Pocket. So I don't know. How does it look to you, Jessica?
It looks nice. It's got, but the blue dots mean it's unread.
Yeah, and I'm not one of those people. I love how some people, just because they think there's unread, it means they have to read an RSS reader. Apparently, like, I don't even really feel that way about email, but, like, apparently there's people who feel like, you know what I mean? They can't have unread items in their RSS reader, but, like, I just have a flood of stuff, and then I just kind of, you know, skim over it and read the stuff that stands out, you know?
That's good. You know, I mean, I think it, people have different email habits and preferences and what they like to do. And, yeah, I think it, you got a lot of folders.
Yeah. I got, a lot of stuff, on there.
Nobody is eating Trix to get healthy.
You know, if you want to eat healthy, you should probably...
Try some beans.
Or something like
you
that.
You should eat greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, and seeds. G-bombs.
Okay. So, this has been the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Dan McKeown. And Jessica McKeown?
Yep.
This is episode 87 for May 14th, 2013. And, you know, I had a song that I wanted to play in the last episode. Well, I thought about it before, and then you know, it didn't occur to me when I was actually editing podcast 86, so I don't want to go bolt it on now. It's already done. But there's a song that I wanted to play on that episode. Do you think we're losing? Do you think it's like, come on, stay through the end. There's more. Keep listening. Enough. Let's see.
I'm just curious as to what you're gonna come up with.
It's taken so long. I can't. Like, I gotta actually go, maybe. Go.
but apparently there is because we're on 87 now.
Goodbye, everybody.